Hey everybody, Patrick McFarlane here of Liberty Bigly. Welcome to another episode. The debate just ended about, I guess, 17 minutes, no, 10 minutes ago now. And I thought I'd get a debate reaction podcast out there. I'm sure there will be many, 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 many more in the coming 24 to 48 hours. However, as you would have heard, Anchor.fm allows me to record on my phone, so I'm sitting on the couch, TV's paused, and getting my quick reactions out there, I suppose. So the biggest moment for me was when Donald Trump said that he's going to have the military distribute a COVID-19 vaccine. And frankly, there was about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 minute gap that I missed kind of in the middle, but otherwise I saw all the rest of it. And I continue to be surprised by how well Joe Biden is doing in these debates in terms of anything, you know, short of, I mean, anything more than a complete and utter disaster is a win for him, I feel like. And he had a few misspeaks, but other than that, I thought he did pretty well. And I mean, I hated everything that he said for the most part. He also lied about fracking in his stance against fracking. And I'm sure Donald Trump will have that up on his website within the next, you know, hour, maybe, because I went on YouTube and I found a compilation video of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris saying that they would ban fracking the first chance they get. So that was a weird, strong stance to be on. I was really surprised by how Donald Trump wasn't able to pin Joe Biden down on the Hunter Biden emails. And maybe Trump is playing the long game for things to really come out. Maybe he's doing what, I mean, you do this in the law all the time in depositions, is you try to pin someone to their story and then you hit them with the impeaching information later. So maybe, I don't know if Trump is playing around with trying to see what Joe Biden's, what his excuse or what his take on the emails is going to be by confronting him about it in the debates. But he really didn't touch that issue so much. And I wonder if it was kind of a calculated play by them to see, you know, not to push it too much because you might lose your advantage somehow by doing that. It's interesting because, you know, maybe Trump doesn't, the people who are not swayed by the Hunter Biden email scandal, the people who aren't swayed yet are people who probably will never be swayed by it. And one thing that I thought the moderator did a lot better this time. However, one thing I really did not like is how she said, oh, these nameless officials in the intelligence community have stated that Iran and Russia and China are all interfering in the election results. And she just said it as if it was fact, and Donald Trump never pushed back on it. I guess if he came out and said, well, you know, just because the intelligence community says something doesn't mean it's true, that's a completely, maybe he can't do that because of his position. And maybe I just didn't pick up on something because it sounded like he said something about how he knew about it last night, which I'm wondering exactly what that means. But so I noticed how Donald Trump firmly, firmly placed himself in the "we need to reopen now" camp, which I do appreciate, of course, as a libertarian and someone who believes that these lockdowns are completely, probably some of the most anti-human policy that we've ever seen, short of genocide. And in some ways it's worse than genocide because, you know, genocide might literally take the lives of 8 million people, but we're talking about taking the lives of 330 million people without killing them. And taking the joy, you know, basically sentencing people to purgatory on earth. Maybe Mao only took, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of people Mao killed, but anyways, so I'm really kind of, though I'm very afraid, and it frightened me to hear Donald Trump saying that a COVID vaccine is going to be delivered by the military. But I'm thinking that, I really hope, I couldn't imagine that it would be some kind of a forced vaccination thing. But maybe I can imagine it. There's maybe because people are imagining a scenario in which the military literally goes door to door and forcibly injects people with a vaccine. I think it's going to be much more insidious in terms of, oh, sorry, you can't have access to your bank accounts, or you can't buy stocks, or you can't go into these federal buildings if you don't get the vaccine. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. So it's going to be a more insidious kind of thing. And maybe that's what it'll be. And I think our only chance is that people will en masse refuse to get a COVID vaccine. And I think, there's a fair amount of people anecdotally that I've talked to who will not get a COVID vaccine. And a lot of them are normie people. And I think I don't quite understand why Trump is endorsing the COVID vaccine, because I think a lot of people in his base wouldn't trust a vaccine and think that COVID is all BS. And even Donald Trump, he said that the survivability rates have gone up and you have a 99% chance of surviving it. So, and Joe Biden is talking about how, oh, we're not against reopening. And there was so much doublespeak, at least on his side, and I'm sure there was some on Trump's side. But I guess my cognitive bias is a bit more towards Trump, just because I'm more right-leaning. But Biden said, oh, we're not against reopening, but you just have to reopen right, the right way. So the implication being that before we reopen, businesses have to change everything and be able to open with all these conditions that are impossible for them to meet, and conditions that would destroy their business anyways. Because now, not only do you have to put up all this overhead, but you only can operate at, like, say, 25% capacity. I suppose I would think that your overhead would be really high. Like, say for a restaurant, your overhead would probably be cheaper if your entire restaurant was closed, so you weren't buying perishables, you weren't running the machines, you weren't frying up, running the fryers, you put the heat down low. And maybe you could get by on some kind of a loan for the time being. Maybe you'd lose less money than if you had to turn the lights on, pay a skeleton crew, but keep buy your inventory, and then keep all of the grill and everything running, and all the soda machines and all of the taps and everything like that, and pay your employees to clean and to have all the PPE and all that stuff. So I guess that would be a calculation that each business owner would have to make. But I'd have to imagine that, maybe staying closed is cheaper in some instances than a partial reopening. But even that being said, to say, oh, I'm not against reopening, but then again to say, well, I am against reopening, except with these conditions, and the conditions are impossible to reach. It's just ridiculous. And on more of a shallow note, I noted how Joe Biden, his right eye looked funny. And maybe this is like a lizard person thing, but if you take a close look at his right eye, it was really wacky looking. And maybe he had a lizard eye, one of those with a slit pupil, something like that. His pupil, I think pupil's the right word. But I don't know, it's just weird. I have to imagine that they put him on some insane uppers. But I was surprised by how slippery he was and how he was able to evade a lot of questions. I think that he cemented certain positions and lied about things. And then he was did a great job of deflecting at Trump, which I kind of wish that Trump didn't take the deflections. Because he would take the bait and he would be railing on Joe Biden about something. And then Joe Biden would shoot back with accusing Trump of things that Joe Biden was doing himself. But Trump would take the bait and then go off on a rabbit hole trying to deflect instead of just going for the throat. And I really wish that Donald Trump would have done that. That being said, one of the biggest complaints that I heard even from Trump's own supporters about his first debate performance was that they didn't like how aggressive he was because they thought it turned a lot of people off. And on that respect, I think Trump did very well because he was respectful, but he still was able to get his barbs in and to look like an alpha. And I don't know, I thought it was effective. However, there were good blows that he got in, but there was a lot of things that I thought he missed on or could have done better at. But like a lot of things, like a deposition, for instance, you don't really know how something went until a little bit later when you've had some more time to reflect. Maybe you can view it again, analyze it. You hear what a bunch of other people are saying. Then that gives you some pause for reflection. Another thing I really liked about Trump is that he kind of, again, he said a lot of, like, anti-war things. And I like how he handled the North Korea topic and situation. And I like that he said, you know, wouldn't it be best to get along with leaders of other countries instead of fighting wars? And wouldn't it be nice to be energy independent instead of having to go out and fight wars to secure our energy? And I thought that was very good, although I don't think that it absolves Trump of all of the bad policy that he's had on certain conflicts, mainly the war in Yemen, but also his inability to end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I thought I heard something about withdrawing from Somalia, and I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I'm not one of these libertarians who I'm not going to wholly criticize Trump for not ending the wars immediately. I'd like to bring all the troops home right now, but I know that that's not going to happen, so that any movement from Trump on the position, as long as it eventually ends with him ending the wars, is something I can get behind. However, you know, I always remain doubtful and skeptical is my default position. I think the portion that I missed out on is when Trump and Biden started talking about race relations in the United States. And I'm watching a video right now saying that Derek Chauvin has one of his murder charges was dropped. So I think they charged him with first degree murder, second degree murder, and third degree murder, which I'm not sure what third degree murder is in Minnesota. I haven't looked at the statutes over there, but it sounds like first degree murder is premeditated. Second is like the heat of the moment passion. Is third degree murder wanton and reckless negligence? Because I thought that was manslaughter. I just can't. You know, in law school, they make you a big part of criminal law is studying the different types of murder. And I always thought it was stupid how we spent so much time on it, because my thought was is that, okay, only 8% of the law students in this class, maybe 5 or maybe 2 or maybe even 3%, maybe even 1% of the lawyers in my entire criminal law class would ever practice homicide. maybe if they became public defenders, or maybe if they started working for a very high profile criminal law firm, would be the time that they would ever litigate a homicide case. And meanwhile, we never talk about wrongful death cases or, something like that, or the mens rea and the actus reus behind criminal conspiracy. Or, I think we spent a fair amount of time on like theft or something like that, theft of movable property, depriving the rightful owner of their property with intent to permanently deprive them of their property. And so I don't know what's going to happen. Tim Pool is reporting that we're going to get mass rioting because Derek Chauvin had this one count dropped against him. And I don't practice criminal law. I did just for a little bit, and that was mostly small stuff. But well, if you, my thought is that I don't know this for sure, and I guess that's why I'm posing the question. But why, if you charge someone with first degree murder, the jury can just convict them of a lesser charge, I think. So why separate out all these different counts for the same facts, for the same action? Maybe it's I don't know if it's not a political thing, but a high profile stunt kind of thing. DA just throws the book at them. And interestingly enough, I do know some people who, classmates of mine, I think, are working in the Hennepin County DA's office. I not anyone I was close with, but people who I would recognize, certainly, and who would know me or who I've talked to of at some time, because I did go to law school in St. Paul. There's three law schools in the Twin Cities. Yeah, I think three. So there used to be four, but two of them merged together. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, I've always kind of wondered what effect the cold weather will have on civil unrest and rioting, and if rioting or unrest would be confined to the southern states. If things, I mean, I don't know if how many of you live in northern, like the northern Midwest or New England, but it gets damn cold. Like there's portions of Wisconsin that get as cold as Canada. I mean, I'm talking negative 30, negative 35 degrees outside Fahrenheit, although negative 30 Fahrenheit and negative 30 Celsius, I think, is the same. Don't quote me on that. But it's pretty damn cold. I mean, so cold that I remember going when I was in high school, I would shower and I'd always be late, of course, because I lived 10-minute drive out of town through like back roads. And I would walk out to the car, and from the time it took for me to walk from the front door to my car, my hair would be frozen. Like you could almost break it off frozen. Or it would get so cold here that if you go skiing and like skate skiing, like cross country skiing, and you're breathing, the condensation would freeze on your beard and you would have icicles hanging off your beard, that kind of thing. Of course, I'm sure, if anyone is listening who's from Alaska, I'm sure you're laughing about this because it gets like negative 50 or 60 there. But it's just something that you learn to deal with. But who wants to riot out in those temperatures? I mean, talk about hypothermia too. It'd be even an added element of danger to rioting. Now the police could have their water cannons and spray everyone. That would be interesting. Some less than lethal ways of dealing with crowd control. So I don't know. It's very interesting to see what will happen. I don't suspect anything will happen, even though Tim Pool is saying that everything's going to go down. But the timing of it is certainly interesting that this third degree murder charge against Derek Chauvin is being dismissed, like, what, less than 2 weeks before the presidential election? Maybe it'll kick off some unrest. I'm not sure. So I'm kind of curious as to what all of you guys think about the debate. I know there's a lot of reaction from the libertarian community, or at least my circles. Some people are questioning why even watch the debate? Why waste your time? I think for me, it's more of a, I try to remain emotionally detached. You get frustrated and kind of angry and a bit depressed about it, but for me, it's more like witnessing history. I have that kind of because, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, 40, 45 years from now, I'm going to be an old man and this will be old history. And it will, this whole coronavirus thing and everything is going to be like the event. Like we right now, we're sitting here looking back at the Great Depression. And I'm not saying necessarily that this is equivalent of an experience to the Great Depression in terms of hardship or anything like that, but it certainly is a point in history. It's a period of time. And I think observing it in real time from the lens of observing history is interesting, and it's something that I think not really should be cherished, but there's this whole time, 50 years from now, maybe I'm still going to have these recordings from my podcast recordings, and it would be a very interesting documentation of history for my kids and for my grandchildren and great grandchildren to be able, I would probably give an arm and a leg to have a whole bunch of recordings of my great grandfather, or have a bunch of recordings of my great grandfather, because well, just my grandfather. I said that twice, but no, just my mom's dad. He was a John Bircher, and he had a bunch of books against the Federal Reserve and against bankers. It was, I think he was from more of a populist side of it, but certainly my grandpa died when I was 1 or 2 years old. And I often wish that he was still alive because he was like an OG paleo conservative kind of type. I think he would have thought I was some kind of a libertarian hippie, but if he was woke on the Federal Reserve, I mean that's like a huge foot in the door. And he was anti-war, and he wrote against the he wrote against Iraq War One. Back in the 90s. So he would write in the paper about it. I have one of his articles that's clipped, and I think it's in my, might be in my copy of Ron Paul's For New, or not For New Liberty, Revolution, I think. So another thing that I noticed was that Joe Biden was very doom and gloom, and Trump was the hope candidate. So one reason I think, like Dave Smith has said, that one reason why Barack Obama won is because he was the hope and change candidate. It's usually the change candidate that wins. And Donald Trump is the change candidate again, somehow. Because Biden has come out and basically endorsed this very pessimistic and negative outlook on the next 4 years. And we were kind of commenting on that in our Libertarian Union group chat that, holy man, like nothing looks good under Biden. Your taxes are going to be, well, I guess this is a very biased point of view, but your taxes are going to be higher. Maybe the only hopeful thing that he had was for his healthcare Bidencare plan. And I think Trump was able to throw some water on that, but Biden's talking about locking back down or how terrible we're going to have a dark winter, he says. And he's also talking about how, well, Trump is saying the stock market's going to crash under Biden. So Trump kept trying to also join in this portrayal of Biden's America as being some kind of a like a dark, desolate experience. And I certainly think that people are going to wake up, or they're going to catch on to that. And they certainly don't want to live under that, even subconsciously. Well, am I going to vote for the candidate who gets up here and says, you know, everything's going to be great. We're going to win. We're going to win so much. And you're going to be so proud of your country and go America. Or are you going to vote for the candidate who says, you know, America was never great. Also, we're going to have a dark winter and things are going to be really bad. And, you know, some people have said, I don't know if Peter Schiff specifically has said that Trump needs to get up there. Interesting. I'm sitting here recording this and the TV is gone to showing Google pictures. You know how when your TV on Chromecast idles and it'll cycle through pictures? Well, the picture, the stock photo that I use for the Liberty Weekly podcast logo, like the podcast logo you see on iTunes, it just popped up as I'm recording this. Wow, I totally just forgot what I was saying. Peter Schiff was saying that what Donald Trump needed to do was say that not take ownership of the bubble economy. And it was interesting that Biden was saying, oh, well, the last 4 years, you said it was the greatest economy ever. However, that was just on paper, and that was Wall Street and all the big billionaires and corporations that made all this money, which is true. However, Biden is on the side of those. And I don't know how Trump let him get away with saying that, because Trump started to say something about 401ks being up. And true, you know, 401ks is the middle class. But Biden... I was just shocked that Biden was saying basically this is a phony bubble economy. But Peter Schiff, you know, has always said that Donald Trump should have started out by saying, well, I inherited a mess. Obama ruined this economy and ruined this country. And we're going to go through some hard times, but we're going to come out it on the other end better and be straight with the American people. Although I think that's the right thing to say. It's bad politics. I mean, who in their right mind is going to vote for a candidate that says, you know, well, you got to take your medicine. It's going to be really bitter and it's going to be hard and bad for a while. But after a year or two, you're going to start getting better. Or are you going to take the candidate who says, you know, we're going to win. We're going to start winning right away. The economy is going to boom. Your 401k is going to go up. We're going to be doing great. We're going to start winning. And we don't win anymore, but we're the greatest country on earth. And we're just going to feel good. And it's going to be a party. You know, who are you going to vote for? But all in all, I think, I don't know. I'm glad I watched the debate. It started to get like kind of a bit boring, but wondering what your guys' thoughts are. I think you should definitely check out the voicemail feature at anchor.fm. Leave me a voicemail. I'll play it in the episode just like you heard in the last episode, the message that Daniel Elwood of Actual Anarchy left for me. And if you'd like to support the show, I could really use some ratings and reviews. So if you go to the Apple Podcast page for Liberty Bigly, you can get there by going to anchor.fm/Liberty Bigly, and there's badges there that you can find my podcast on. And so if you go to the iTunes badge, I'd really, really appreciate it. It really helps with the search algorithm and those results so that other people will see my podcast more. So if you'd go there, give me a rating, give me a review, I'd really appreciate that. Or share the show with some other libertarians that you think would enjoy it if you come across an episode that you think might also pique their interest. So thanks a lot for joining me. Tomorrow is Friday. I'm very excited. So, all right. Well, take care, everyone. Have a good night. Peace.